everyone, and welcome to this special Soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. As regular listeners know, these Soapbox editions of the show are sponsored, and that means everyone you hear in a Soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast paid to be here. It is my first day back on deck after a couple of weeks off, and I am feeling a little bit more energetic, but I did happen to remember over these last 2 weeks that there is no such thing as time off when you have a baby in the house. My God. Anyway, we're going to kick things off on my week back with this interview with Joep Hommers, the CEO and founder of Eclectic IQ, which is, of course, a threat intelligence-oriented company. And if your job involves handling threat intel, then I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. It touches on a bunch of things. Keep in mind, I'm not someone who's intimately familiar with threat intelligence platforms, so the first part of this interview is talking through what Eclectic IQ actually offers currently, and then we talk more broadly about operationalizing threat intelligence. And finally, we talk about Eclectic IQ's new product release, which includes introducing an XDR tool, including their own agents. So they're kind of making a play for that EDR, XDR space, and their approach is quite different here too. So yeah, here is Joep Hommers, a super smart guy, talking about all of that. I really enjoyed this interview, and I hope you do too.
So at Eclectic IQ, our core product is a threat intelligence platform. And we come out of a world where we ran, I think, one of the leading threat intelligence teams in the industry. And years ago, we were kind of on this ramp up where intelligence team became part of a large enterprise or a government organization. And these teams had the same needs as we had as a threat intelligence capability is, given all these intelligence sources that we have, how do we make sense of all of this, and how do we draw an understanding out of all this information so that we can use it for the purposes of improving my cybersecurity, detecting things, responding to things, et cetera. And so our threat intelligence platform was first built to help teams of analysts make sense of large volumes of data and understand the cyber threat information that can kind of emerge from it. Who's doing what in what way, and how can you kind of observe it and draw these constellations of knowledge base in a way.
So that's kind of enabling the people sitting at the top of that pyramid to kind of have that macro view, right? Like that's cool, right? I get that.
Exactly.
But that's not all you really do though, is it?
Exactly. So that's kind of step number one. But then two is you have places where this conversation is not happening in one room, let's say within a large bank's organization, but it's happening across organizations, let's say in a national security context or in a critical infrastructure collaboration context. And now multiple teams and multiple organizations have to have a dialogue, quote unquote, have to collaborate on their shared understanding of a cyber threat. So when they learn something, other people need to learn from it. Or rather than exchanging information and increasing the burden for organizations, how do you make people collaborate on one, let's say, understanding of APT 33, and have them collaborate in the process of building up this understanding of, oh, and now I know what the behavior is. Oh, now I know the malware that's using. Oh, now I know the attribution part of it. And together, you're kind of building up this picture. And so a threat intel platform, at least our threat intel platform, is also enabling this conversation to happen, is enabling the shared understanding to grow so that we can use it operationally. And so this is why our customers are kind of these two categories. Enterprises that are trying to protect themselves and trying to kind of make sense of all the information they have access to so they understand their threat landscape and use that in their cybersecurity efforts. On the other side, how do we enable national security to have this conversation with its own governments, with its classified side, with its critical infrastructure companies, and to kind of build this shared picture together? And there's something interesting there. I think the current approach has always been, let's exchange information to each other. So one's reactive becomes the other's proactive. But I think we've learned that just increases burden and effort and problem rather than decreases it. So it's a little bit more around shared collaborative work rather than exchanging in the context of how our threat intel platform facilitates the national security side of our customer base. But then we're kind of embarking on a new journey because I think we're realizing our customers have become pretty good at understanding cyber threats and having a rich understanding of it. But operationalizing the information for, let's say, purposes of detection or response is not a solved problem.
No, it's a long way from being a solved problem, right?
And
it's
here.
I mean, the crazy thing is, you know, we're often, when it comes to threat intel, like we're often talking about really simple information, right? We could be talking about something as simple as a file hash or an IP address, and actually getting some value out of that simple information too often involves it being emailed around in Excel files, or, you know, like, it's just crazy the amount of sticky tape that's involved with doing that. But look, before we get into the operationalizing threat intel part of the conversation, it might be useful for the audience if you actually walk us through, like, what a typical use case, and I mean, walk us through it in a concrete way, what a typical use case for Eclectic IQ might be in one of those examples that you mentioned, right? Like, say a bank is dealing with one of the FIN 7, FIN 11, whatever, and they're using your platform to better understand that threat. What does that process look like? How are they using your platform to do that?
Got it. So I think it starts with the context in which they operate, which is usually not one team who is asked by the business to solve this problem, but like several teams across subsidiaries of like a larger bank. But let's say either one, and they're faced with this challenge of we have to acquire intelligence from the outside world about what cyber threat looks like, and we are responsible for making sense of it and telling whoever inside the organization at the right time with the right information in the right way how the threat landscape is changing, so they can do what they do: fraud, risk, vulnerability management, security detection, response, or whatever those things are. So it also already starts to kind of cut things up in a few problems that they have to solve. One is something like, we have access to dozens of commercial intelligence sources and open sources and communities that all speak different languages, different taxonomies, different data models. How do we bring it together in a sort of manageable, consumable fashion for me as a group of analysts?
Well, normalizing that sort of data, like, I've got another sponsor that does the same thing for vulnerability information, right? You know, they take stuff from Qualys, from Nessus, from NetSparker, from whatever, from Burp Suite. And then the first thing they do is they bring it in and normalize it so that they can then start slicing and dicing it and distributing it. So it's a similar sort of vibe, but for threat intel.
Exactly. And there's some other challenges beyond normalization. Like, what if two vendors call APT33 by a different name? How do you still know
they're
the same?
Don't even get me started on this, right?
Right. So we have to create a mechanism and an automation mechanism that we can kind of configure and tweak knowledge packs in our platform that say, or expert knowledge captured in our platform to say, oh, if you see these two vendors speak about it, it's the same thing, for example. Or we have to solve problems like, I have a subscription for this amazing enrichment vendor for passive DNS data A, but I only have 10,000 queries in my subscription. So how are we going to use those 10,000 queries? Is it off of the open sources and then quickly my API queries run out? Or am I going to kind of have to really design how I use my investment effectively? And I think that ingestion pipeline therefore becomes a lot more than just data normalization. It becomes this intelligent beast you have to manage to get the most out of the money that you're spending on these intel sources, from correlation and kind of rule-based mangling of the data, so it becomes this knowledge base that you can actually work with.
Okay, so that's making a lot more sense to me now. Like, I think that's painted a much more concrete picture of what you're doing at that top level, right? Which is to ingest, kind of normalize, work with what you have, and get a good picture. And then I guess...
Exactly. Exactly. So then starts the first problem of like a group of people that want to use this information. And so they have all these access and user experience patterns say they're expecting, like, I need to be able to search this information, obviously. I need to be able to visualize this information or explore it in a graph-like form. Or I'm a group of analysts and I am trying to understand how APT23 works, or Bear, or Panda, whatever, right? Somebody calls it. How do we build this up, given we're in different places in the world and we wake up at different times of the day? How do I have a collaborative construct within which I can do that, like little tasks going back and forth, or a workspace where information is built up, or a conversation, literally, I can have around this cyber threat, so that you can manage the workflow, what these people are doing. And they're like triage workflows, like when do I need to be woken up? Or analytical workflows, like how do I know new information was received about something I care about? Because you're subscribed to millions of new things coming in every day and you're not going to look at all of them. So, like, how does it bubble up to an analyst around a topic that they particularly care about so that they can advance their report or advance their understanding of a problem that they're tracking? And so you have to kind of facilitate the day-to-day workflow of this intelligence team, just like you would for an engineering team with Jira, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to make the comparison, right? Like, I was biting my tongue because Jira makes most listeners shudder. But it's an apt comparison. It seems that way. So really, you're talking about a platform that, you know, the people who are touching that platform, anyone involved on the sort of TI side in the enterprise or, you know, government worldwide, and this is kind of like their virtual home. This is their one system where they collaborate. From there, when it comes to operationalizing this information, you know, and it's great that you've got this tool that helps people to think strategically, et cetera, et cetera. But then when it comes to actually making it actionable, is that something that you play a role in, or is that up to the customer, like how they do that?
It's ultimately up to the customer how they use our technology, but our technology needs to facilitate that. And I think there's like a few layers to it. The first is, who are you communicating to? If the role of that team is to facilitate how does the right information get to the right people at the right time, it isn't just about detection. It's about this whole myriad of reasons why this large enterprise is spending millions on understanding their cyber threat landscape. So it's also about every morning at 8 o'clock, the risk management team needs to get an email. And in that email is all the highly ranked reports from these vendors and the reports of the Intel team itself, neatly delivered around the topics that they care about as a written form, which might be very different than every 3 minutes, all the high confidence indicators compatible with my web proxy should really kind of go there, and the web proxy should be updated with that detection information. And so most of our customers have dozens of these kind of pipelines downstream to people and systems and processes that have reasons to take subsets of this intelligence. And
then put it in an Excel file and email it to the firewall admin.
Unfortunately, that happens more often than not.
Before we go any further, I did just want to pick up on something. Threat intel stuff is a bit of a black hole when it comes to my knowledge. So I reached out to a blue teamer that I know who works with these sorts of tools. And I asked him, like, what should I talk about? Like, what are people expecting from threat intel platforms? Like, what's your biggest challenge? He said something interesting, which is that QA is just like such a big part of the job. You just mentioned like high priority indicators. Determining what and what is not a high priority indicator seems to be more difficult than it should be, right? Because people are bringing in such disparate sources. Some of them are really good, some of them not so much. You get bad stuff coming in all the time. So does your platform, you know, do you provide tooling to people to do their own QA on the threat intel they're subscribed to? Do you have your own trust rankings for various sources? Like, I'm just curious to know how you handle this issue of people dealing with threat intel, which really varies in quality.
So yes, we have to help customers with this because it's one of the primary reasons they are looking for the automation side to take off the kind of mundane tasks of quality assurance for intelligence. So, and one part starts with all these different sources that speak different languages and that really need some expert knowledge to interpret, to understand if they, you know, if they mention something in this context but not in that context, they mean it in a high confident way versus a low confident way. So it starts on that ingestion side and putting this expert knowledge into your integrations. It's much more than a data integration. It's interpreting, you know, if it's in a table in the report, it's often used in this context because not all vendors give you a nice API and kind of you have to put that expert knowledge in. And then automation can help with like, ask VirusTotal what they know, ask this passive DNS source what they know, ask this amazing Intel 471 guys in their Actor database what they know.
So that's more your approach is like the enrichment approach as opposed to just like a binary, well, not a binary, but like a ranking out of 10 in terms of trust or confidence.
For sure. And then through all of that, we can aggregate a few dimensions, like the reliability of different sources, the confidence that we have in the integrity of the data.
That'd be the out of 10 bit that I just mentioned.
Exactly. But like a few different dimensions we try and conclude based on what all these different sources tell us. But that is really just still metadata. I want to make sure we're not confusing, you know, the fact that indicators are well tagged and well classified and quote unquote some quality assurance happens on them doesn't actually mean they're part of a problem that you are facing and that you should be spending time on. So part of the quality assurance process is I'm an organization. I'm receiving literally millions of new pieces of information every day, new actors, new MITRE attack techniques, new malware, new indicators, or whatever those things are. A quality assurance also means, you know, what of that information relates to me? How much do I, as an analyst team, spend time on putting that picture together so we are refining the way we can detect this? Because make no mistake, just integrating indicators into your detection systems is not going to give you what you're looking for.
And this is kind of the meaty part of the conversation, right? Which is, we've got the ingesting part, you know, we've spoken about that. But as you've already said, operationalizing this stuff, I think people who aren't working on blue teams who deal with threat intel would be kind of shocked by how difficult it is to actually operationalize this stuff and the extent to which, you know, there's no auto magic thing happening here where you subscribe to an intel feed and like all of a sudden your seams spitting out like these really high quality indicators, like high quality signals. That's just not how it works. It's really ugly. So, I mean, it might be helpful for the listeners if you explain why that's the case. I mean, it's a big topic, but you know, give it a crack. This is your jam.
It is a big topic, and let's see if I can kind of break it down, but maybe I can start with what definitely is working, because we definitely solved, not we just Eclectic IQ, although we help our customers with that. I think the market has definitely solved, if you do have a good knowledge base of intelligence, you can take subsets of that from, let's say, indicators, use all this metadata you've collected, all this enrichment you've collected to say, for these use cases, we're going to use this indicator. So perhaps not high quality versus low quality, but my web proxy needs to get these things with these thresholds of quality, but my SIEM being only able to handle so many indicators because cost, volume, etc. Let's take the top 1,000 things that look like this with this level threshold quality and put it there. And kind of usually you build a few dozen of these use cases for all these different systems downstream, and you choose what cadence and what level of threshold is used for that use case, because sometimes you're optimizing for high quality, like, if you see this, stop it. We for sure know it's bad.
Yeah, if you see this, run and pull the power out of the wall. Yeah, yeah, there's those ones,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. But sometimes it's like a fishnet. More like, if you see this, it demands some follow-up, depending on the kind of security control that you're talking about. And I think in that specific world, we've kind of gone a little bit too far in our own success, I think, with integrating indicator-based intelligence into our security control system, because our whole thinking there is high quality, meaning low volume, high confident alert generation based off of intelligence, which means that in the pipeline towards that, you're making all these choices. Like, if we don't know for sure it's of high quality, you know, let's just not use it because it will not generate a high quality alert. But what you're kind of saying is you might have the gem in your knowledge base around what APT29's new methodology looks
but
like.
You didn't know you had it, right? And this is kind of the challenge with threat intel is, knowing really what matters, right? Like, and it comes back to that thing that I said at the intro, right? Which is, we love to point and laugh at threat intel because of the challenges, right? But we also love to point and laugh at people who miss something simple that they would have picked out of a simple threat intel feed, right? So it's
right.
Yeah, it's just one
but
of those things.
It's kind of like the fact that, you know, a very dangerous terrorist walked outside on the street among 1,000 other people did mean that you could have seen him, but doesn't mean you had the means to kind of detect it. So the same problem here we face with, like, the fact that you have information doesn't mean you have the right tools and processes to down select what information is used in what context to give you value in the business.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, there was a lot of finger pointing at various agencies after 9/11, right? Which is, you know, 20 years ago now, almost. And you know, at that time it was like, well, there was this intelligence, you know, sitting there that was never followed up. And I think that's something that happens, right? But to the general public, it was kind of an outrage. It is a little bit similar in this context, isn't it? You might have the information there, but there was no way you could have known that that was the information that you had to act on.
Right. And in the intelligence community after 9/11, based on thinking of a gentleman named Robert M. Clark, He said something like, we have this intel life cycle, we all know. We collect information, we analyze information, we produce something consumable, and then we send it to the person, team, or technology that then needs to take action. And he said something like, that loop takes way too fast. We need to think it more, he called it target-centric, is let's take a shared understanding of something. We're trying to understand, now in Cyber's case, APT29, in his case, terrorism threats against towers or whatever, and then all stakeholders are at the same time engaging with that model of understanding. And yes, sometimes the information isn't perfect yet, but we're all getting it in real time. I'm collecting information, somebody receives it in real time, I'm analyzing, it's happening in real time, I'm consuming while it's being analyzed in real time. And so when you think about a threat intel platform, and even the way we've actually designed our system is this kind of target-centric approach to it. We say, whatever can be automated in action, we do right away, but it doesn't negate the fact that we're creating a shared understanding over time so that all the different stakeholders can consume from it. We don't wait for a full understanding of a cyber threat to start detecting it, but when you respond to it, you might need that understanding. So your response gets better as your understanding of the problems gets better. And so helping a customer to understand, it's not about ingesting, storing, automating, and integrating. It's about doing that while you're building an understanding so that all your other reasons you need intelligence are also serviced. After you detect something, you can respond well. When you detect something, what is it really about? If you're responding in a more risk context, how do you even know how to think about the risk something entails if you don't know its context? And so you have to do both these things, action what you can, but built towards an understanding with just hard human work, and most of the times, or hard human work by people that you outsourced.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the automation side, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that most of the threat intel platforms, yourselves included, you know, you've kind of got to that point where you can start automating stuff going into things like web proxies and firewalls and SIEMs and whatever. You can build rules around that. So in terms of operationalizing stuff there, that's almost a solved problem?
It is, were it not for the fact that the landscape is changing so fast that the concept of indicators of compromise are diminishing in value. So we've kind of cracked a nut on something that is diminishing in value because the let's say an indicator usually indicates something that they use, an infrastructure, a piece of malware, but the permutation of infrastructure change and malware recompilation change and things like that are going so fast.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, one thing that hardly anyone's talking about is like all of these TLS extensions and, you know, new stuff in TLS 1.3, right? Like it's basically domain fronting by default. And so much C2 is just going to be shunted through services like Cloudflare, like Akamai, like Azure, right? And you know, forget about IPs being useful C2 indicators in a couple of years, right? So, I mean, but where does that leave a platform like yours that was built, I'm guessing network indicators like that, like IP addresses, domain names, stuff like that. I'm guessing that was a really important data type for you. Where's that going to leave you? And I'm guessing you're going to have an answer for that because it is kind of a big thing that's happening right now.
Yeah. I think a few years ago, we started on this mantra of beyond the IOC. Because in the intelligence world that our customers live in already, is beyond the IOC. It's trying to understand behavior of something. It's trying to understand the story around what's happening. But that doesn't mean those behaviors and stories are translatable into an operational context. That was always the indicator component to it. But if the indicator component is diminishing in value, guys, how are we going to solve this problem? Right now, we're orchestrating yesterday's news very quickly, which is amazing, but we're still orchestrating yesterday's news, kind of. And so I think we're thinking about it across a few different dimensions, but it starts at the core of, we have to look at this beyond the IOC and things that are now emerging, like the MITRE ATT&CK framework, which is a behavior TTP based way of thinking about detecting behavior and taxonomizing a threat is an example of how you do that. And I can definitely attempt to explain what that means for us.
It's exactly where I wanted this conversation to go, right? Which is you have to be more nuanced. You know, and that's what MITRE ATT&CK has done. It's sort of given us this nuanced way to describe behaviors as opposed to like simple string-based indicators. You know, it's kind of the future of this stuff, don't you think?
It is. And I think it's also the answer to what we were talking about before, which is we're now pursuing this low volume, high quality alerts. And we've put this threshold therefore in place below which we're blind. We're not really blind, but we're kind of choosing to be blind in a way, above which we're celebrating the fact we have high quality intelligence creating high quality alerts. And by moving into more behavior-based detection through something like MITRE ATT&CK-based signatures and detection content and hunting content brought into the world of intelligence management, which is something that I think we're the first tip to actually do that, is to say it's not just about contextual intelligence and indicators. It's also about detection content and threat hunting content, which for some reason is now managed separate from threat intel platforms in Excel sheets and Wikipedias and things like that.
Yeah, this is the interesting part of this conversation, which is what is a threat intel platform guy doing talking about new forms of detection and MITRE attack and whatever, right? Like, it kind of feels like you're moving towards the direction where you're going to actually start operationalizing some of this stuff in new products. I mean, is that the plan here?
For sure. So I think one part of the plan we have already executed on is intelligence is only as relevant as you can use it in an operational context. So great that we can consolidate sources with contextual intelligence, but if we can't capture in that the way you detect it, then how relevant is that knowledge base really in the context of an average enterprise or an average national government? And so we're bringing in MITRE tech information, which is kind of happening to some degree by others, but it's not just about annotating this threat is using this behavior. It's really about saying this threat is using this behavior in this specific way enough so that we can detect it. So there's kind of a world of detection content management around it that we have to facilitate as a threat intelligence platform market.
But how are you facilitating that? Because you don't live in the SIEM, really. I mean, you're a contributor to the SIEM. You're not a consumer of the SIEM. Or if I got that wrong, are you now consuming from the SIEM?
I think we're a producer for the SIEM, right? So what does the SIEM use to detect is something that we help facilitate to begin with. So that's our current product. But I kind of want to lift the veil a little bit of what we're about to launch into the world as well. But it starts with that. It starts with, great that you understand cyber threat, but we have to help the customer manage the information of how you detect it so that they can put it in a SIEM, not by use of indicators, but by use of detection content and hunting content, describing more the detection ability for behavior and other tools and techniques that the adversary is using rather than just the infrastructure he's constantly reusing, which is really, if the market buzzword is, we have to help the customer to threat hunt beyond just a high quality alert generation in a SOC context. Because threat hunting is trying to solve this problem of high volume, low confidence signals versus low volume, high confidence signals. I think what we've realized is just the threat intel platform is not going to give you enough functionality by just integrating with these detection systems and by just integrating with existing platforms, because they're not always open and extendable enough. And the way intelligence is integrated isn't always appropriate enough to really put intelligence at the core of how you're detecting there. And so we've chosen to stay open and extendable and integrate with the landscape of our customers, but to also launch our own endpoint, which is launching right about now, setting ourselves up on a journey to launch an XDR later in the year, which is trying to solve the problem of, I have good understanding of the cyber threat, but how do I really operationalize it in a detection, hunting, and response context?
I mean, this is interesting because essentially you're talking about taking on CrowdStrike, right? Others have tried something similar to what you're describing here. And the one that I think of, it's so amazing that we're recording this now because, you know, recently it was announced that FireEye's product side was going to get sold off, right? You had this situation where FireEye and Mandiant came together and the whole idea was to fuse all of this threat intelligence from Mandiant's IR caseload and use that to drive product development. And, you know, FireEye and Mandiant were going to be this wonderful hybrid two-headed thing. It was a disastrous flop. Yoop, why won't it go that way for you?
Ah, I love this question. It's hitting the nail on the head because the fundamental insight of that deal is something like, it's no longer about the instrumentation of the security control. It's more, how do I, agnostic of where data comes from, like telemetry from the endpoint, agnostic of the security controls that I have, I need to put intelligence and good human service on top of this landscape to make it relevant to me. And I think that's very similar to the observation that we have, like expanding attack surface means you don't want to pay for each new endpoint, right? You want to pay for what happens with all this data. Let's just take as a given, this telemetry is going to grow like, I want to say a swear word, but it's going to grow very quickly in the years to come, right? So I don't want to start to increase my cost base just because I have cloud workloads or just because the number of endpoints that I collect from is increasing. I want to spend my time with the security use cases I want to have on top of the data. And I think that's an insight we share as well. And so our platform is very much based on how can we enable customers to put intelligence at the core of those use cases. And sure, we have an endpoint that you can collect that data with, but that's not where we're going to spend the time and money for the customer.
So where are you going to spend it? Because it's, I mean, there's interesting stuff happening at the moment. You've got Microsoft with Sentinel, right? You've got Google with Chronicle or whatever they're calling it at the moment. I think they're just calling it Chronicle. And the idea there is it's unlimited, right? So they want you feeding in data from like CrowdStrike or whatever into there. It feels like there's a bit of this happening at the moment. You've got Elastic who bought Endgame, right? For a couple hundred million bucks. So they're trying to go for this as well. It feels like, yeah, SIEM and endpoint integration is kind of a new thing. But what are you going to bring to it as a new entrant into the EDR, or as now everyone's calling it, the XDR space, right? Which plus network. But yeah, so what are you going to bring to the sort of XDR space that those other players can't deliver?
I think we start from the perspective that everything starts with intelligence at the core. Everything starts with what cyber threat looks like and how it's changing, around which you build both the technology required to collect telemetry, detect that activity, and facilitate the workflow. And so, for example, right now we would solve this problem by having disparate solutions, a TIP and an EDR and an orchestrator kind of connected together, reacting on each other's data. But what it doesn't allow you to do is to really change the behavior or how these components act based on more fundamental insight than the indicators you're holding over to each other or the detection content. For example, let's say we see how a certain APT29 is evolving over time. It isn't just about the right detection content, which yes, you need to have, and yes, you need to collaborate on, and yes, you need to overlay on your telemetry. It's also about the question, how can I now collect the right forensic depth, almost, information on my endpoint just for this specific threat, so that it doesn't burden my entire laptop all the time, so that I can't use it anymore because you can't detect forensic level for all things, but because the understanding of the cyber threat goes all the way down across the stack, changes the behavior of the technology so that you can collect the right things, detect in the right way, and present it in the right way, is an example of how you put it at the core of it.
So this is like EDR. I'm a bank. I care about FIN7. I care about FIN11. I'm not so worried about this other thing. So I want to tune this technology to be worried about these threats that affect me. So, I mean, it seems like that's kind of where you're going with this.
I think that's one example of your whole stack needs to move with the changing threat landscape rather than bolted on with some intelligence integrated within. I think that's one fundamental insight. You can't detect deep enough and well enough if you don't make the whole stack move with the new understanding of cyber threat. The other part of it is who's part of the conversation around understanding these cyber threats. Right now, most of our customers and most of the market faces the same problem in isolation. And threat intelligence in some degree is a mechanism to overcome it because you get access to the same insight as other people have. But there's so much quick learning that's happening. There's so much feedback possible if we only connect our customers and our customers' customers together in a way. So when we say intelligence at the core, we don't mean we have an Intel team and we integrate it deeply in the way we just described. We mean intelligence is the thing you're also collaborating on. There is a shared collaborative way that we connect our customers together so that one reactive action of a customer becomes the proactive stance of another customer. And so the way we democratize almost the acquisition and sharing of intelligence is a big part, I think, of what is required to put intelligence at the core of any kind of cybersecurity context.
So I'm curious too to know if you're going to try to displace AV, right? Because that was when things really took off for your CrowdStrikes, is when they're like, you don't need to run Symantec anymore, you can just run us. EDR as a telemetry tool is important. EPP is vital, right? So are you going to deploy alongside EPP or AV, or are you going to try to displace those things? And if so, how are you going to do that?
Yeah, good question. I think it kind of follows the line a little bit with the endpoint is commodifying. When you have a Windows license, AV Defender comes with it, and it's an amazing piece of technology.
Yeah,
and this trend is continuing forever. And so even our current endpoint integrates with the AV the customers are getting. So I think the first feedback would be something like, we are not going to have to.
Yeah.
If you solve the problems that are not being solved now, the rest is commodifying very rapidly. And as long as you integrate deeply with it, you're not going to have to kind of reinvent the wheel. That's part of the answer. The other part of it is I am a small company still. We raised an amazing amount of capital for the innovations that we're building, but we're not going to be able to compete with the entire product market fit that a CrowdStrike has. I think right now we're looking for customers that believe what we believe, which is intelligence is valuable, it's not used sufficiently, and we have to connect the customers together to create a shared understanding. We have to put intelligence at the core of our cybersecurity, and we have to solve not just the security operations problem of high confidence alerts, but we have to solve the problem of everything lost below that threshold. And I think first we're going to try and solve these problems. And yes, meanwhile, yeah, we integrate with IV and we integrate with EVP solutions, but we're not going to try and compete in that space just yet. Let's solve these problems first.
It's almost like you're going back to the roots of the CrowdStrike idea, which is pure play, intelligence-driven EDR.
Beyond the endpoints. So yeah. And this is why this is going to turn XDR is emerging.
I'm sorry.
I'm not per se a fan of the word XDR. I think it's just a multi-source telemetry capture and providing the right intelligence-led detection and hunting and response capabilities on top. Because the latter is such a misunderstood thing where we still don't, let's say, we have a lot of education still to do in the market. I really think it's an underestimated problem where we're celebrating so hard these amazing alerts we're getting by putting the threshold higher, and we're just kind of a little bit shoving under the rug kind of what we're not seeing. So it's not just a multi-source capture of telemetry and overlaying the intel. It's the user experience. We all know what a SOC looks like, what level 1, 2, 3 looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I've been focusing on the agent side of this, but you know, Google obviously has a natural advantage when it comes to storing and processing huge amounts of data. Microsoft also, Elastic also, right? So, I mean, I can understand how you can knock together a endpoint sort of collection agent, but what are you doing on the sort of server side of that, right? Like, how are you going to spin up? You're going to be dealing with a lot of disk is what I'm getting at, right? Where's that infrastructure going to live? Like, have you selected a cloud platform to do that? Are you rolling your own? Like, what's that going to look like?
So I think the fundamental problem we had to solve was exactly what you're saying. It's like multi-source telemetry coming our way in incredible volumes. Which if you really would index it, let's say in an Elastic or in something like that, the cost structure of that is frankly even beyond the average team that you
see. It's prohibitive.
It's quite considerable.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So there's kind of two paths that we had as choices. We're going to roll our own. You go like HBase and you know, build your own tech stack to try and optimize cost structure. But we found a great partner in Devo, kind of a challenger in the SIEM space, was thinking very much like we do, which is cloud-based, open and extendable, high volume, but in a technological way that allows us to have lower cost. So what you give up is some freedom in the way it indexes data and you can access it. What you get back is, if you have your use cases right, huge storage volumes, huge speeds, and solving this particular problem for us, which gives me even more confidence in the fact that, great, there's companies like Devo solving that problem for us, which is not non-trivial. So we can focus on how do we put intelligence at the core of actually seeing and observing these threats as we integrate into the telemetry we capture, but then store in something like Devo.
Well, I think that's actually a great place to leave it. Joop Kommes, that was really interesting. And I'm being very sincere when I wish you really good luck with this, because I think we need new entrants into this space, and the people trying to do stuff that's ambitious, the people trying to do stuff that's sensible. I hope it's great. I hope it comes out and everybody loves it. And I hope it's really successful for you. And that's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you.
Much appreciated. And I hope along the way, we can also help shape the new technologies and standards and practices around hunting that help everybody else too. Because lots to do around trying to solve these problems in the industry. And thanks for the time, Patrick.
That was Joep Rommers there with a chat about operationalizing threat intelligence. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be back in a couple of days with a weekly show of the Risky Business Podcast. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.